On yesterday's show, we had a spirited discussion about the future of the state's Democratic Party in the wake of the election of Donald Trump. Today, we consider the Republicans. It was a bitter, divisive, at times unpleasant primary season for Republicans. There was name-calling, there were insults. At times, the debate stage felt like a middle school cafeteria. But then Republicans nominated Donald Trump, and despite a lot of Republicans' misgivings, they catapulted him to the presidency. We're going to be talking with a group of Republican activists about that journey. But first, I spoke with Susan Hutchison, the chair of the state's Republican Party. She told me why Donald Trump didn't do so well in Washington state.
Definitely, it's because of Seattle, King County. That is the juggernaut we've got to get through with our presidential candidates every time. But we also perform very well. Donald Trump performed very well in the coastal counties, and that's the reason that we gained a House seat in a traditionally Democrat district. So Trump helped in that district to give Jim Walsh a victory.
Do you have a mathematical problem, though, in that you have such a big Democratic-leaning section of the state in Seattle and the metropolitan Seattle area, and that getting a presidential candidate through, or getting statewide candidates or U.S. Senate candidates through, is going to be next to impossible for Republicans?
Well, I don't think it's impossible. I think every year is new and different. And one of the things that's going to happen with Donald Trump as president is people are going to be seeing some solutions, Republican solutions to problems, such as the economy, such as jobs, such as national defense and national security. And as time goes on and people begin to see the changes, I think that they will be more amenable to thinking about Republicans in a positive light. It's been 8 years of President Obama, and I have to be honest, I live here. In fact, I only live probably less than a mile from this studio here in the U District. And I've lived here for over 35 years. And there is a dearth of broad-based information being perpetuated in the city of Seattle. It's pretty much no breathing room here for Republican thought. And you ask any Republican in the city what it feels like, and every one of them thinks they're the only one. You know, none of us get to put up signs in our yard. Nobody gets to put bumper stickers on their cars because they know they'll be damaged or vandalized. And so it's that kind of, I always start out my speeches to speaking to Republican groups around the state as I live in the place where free speech is not free, mm-hmm. because it'll cost me money if I put a bumper sticker on my car.
Literally? You've had your car vandalized?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You've got to be so careful about how you express yourself.
In the interest of building empathy, again, today, what do you say to those folks on the other side who might be, I know there's a lot of concern among progressives about some of this, you know, white nationalism, you know, these folks on the fringes of the Trump movement who are now becoming emboldened and sort of a rise in hate crimes. And the campaign was so full of bullying that this has become like the norm in political discourse now. So what do you say to folks on the other side who literally say, I'm scared by a Trump administration?
Well, I would say that right now, I believe Democrats are working through the various stages of grief. And the denial, the anger, all of those parts of the grieving process. I know the feeling. I am a Republican. And so not only was I particularly unhappy with the reelection of Barack Obama, I have been so dismayed at his policies. So I can understand that there are people on the other side of the aisle who have the same feeling and will continue to have that feeling about Republican policies that are passed in the next 4 years. I completely understand that. But eventually we have to let go of kind of the inflammatory rhetoric. And I would say that an awful lot of the stuff that's being said right now, the name calling and so forth about Trump and his supporters, it's out of bounds. It's ridiculous. And it's false. So we are your friends and we are your neighbors, and we have a different way of believing that people can succeed in America. And so I look forward to watching the actions of our next president and those who surround him and being able to see a very positive move forward.
You're presiding over a party where there have also been pretty significant differences during the primary process and even continuing with, you know, many prominent Republicans saying they didn't vote for Trump, they don't support Trump. And I'm wondering, and you know, you've been a pretty loyal defender of Trump through the general election. Do you feel vindicated in a sense?
Well, the reason I would feel any vindication at all is on behalf of the people who chose Trump as their nominee. And that's who I realized, you know, I began to listen to the Trump supporters in the late spring, where I hadn't really before that. And I began to understand that their concerns for America were significant and that they represented kind of a gut level sense for the fears and concerns that they had for their world. And I do understand that there were some prominent Republicans in our state who were in that never Trump category. And I think that's one of the reasons why Trump performed so poorly, because I think there were a lot of Republicans and independents who may have chosen to vote Republican, but they were confused.
And what do you say to those folks who are, I mean, I guess Chris Vance has been on our air in recent weeks saying, you know, he doesn't feel like he has a home in the Republican Party anymore. So what do you say to folks like that who really feel alienated within your party by what's been happening?
People may not like Donald Trump's style, but they certainly, if they're Republicans, like some of the people that he's selected to surround himself with. And anyone who understands presidential politics knows you're not electing an individual. You're electing that person and all the people that they choose as advisors and cabinet members, who then go ahead and hire many, many more, hundreds, if not thousands of people to populate government. And so when I look at some of the selections that have been made by President-elect Trump thus far, I am really excited.
You're convinced that Donald Trump will win over these never Trump folks in the state?
I think he will. And it's not that, you know, we're not looking for a messiah as our president. We're looking for someone who can get the job done. And I think that Donald Trump has a long history of getting the job done. Now, some the ways he does things is a little confusing or even perplexing or concerning. But as I watch him work, I keep going back to that art of the deal. And I keep thinking, okay, if he actually is going to govern the way he does business, everything starts as a negotiation. And people should take heart in that. They will hear one thing, but they've got to understand that's where the negotiation begins.
A couple more questions. Are you considering a job in the administration, or are you being asked?
Actually, I think I would answer that the way everybody who is being looked at for any particular position, and I know that I am, I would say if the country asked me to serve, I would be honored to serve. As you know, I came from a military family, and I was a military daughter. My dad served for 33 years, and my husband also served for 30 years in the Marine Corps. And so it's in my blood to serve the country in whatever form I can. And so if Donald Trump asked me to serve in a capacity that was good for me and good for the country, I would definitely take a long, hard look at it.
That was Susan Hutchison, chair of the state's Republican Party, who says she is being considered for a post in the Trump administration, but she didn't say which one. We want to continue the discussion about the future of the state's Republican Party. And in the studio, we have three Republican activists who represent a diversity of views. Olga Farnham is a lifelong Republican from rural Snohomish County. She's a state committee woman and has been an alternate delegate to the last two Republican national conventions. Manise Pierre is a small business owner and Republican activist. He's been a field organizer managing canvassing efforts for the party in North Puget Sound. And Braden Wilkerson has been a delegate to two Republican national conventions. This year, he was elected on a Ted Cruz slate. He describes himself as a conservatarian, which I guess is conservative and libertarian. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this was a very long campaign, lots of twists and turns and lots of bumps in the road. And I'm really interested to hear about your personal journeys through this past year. Olga, let's start with you. You were not an early supporter of Donald Trump.
No, I was not. I initially supported Marco Rubio. I kept some of my views to myself for quite a while. I am also the caucus and convention chair in Snohomish County, and I do the caucus training. So I tried to keep my preference to myself for as long as I could until I had to declare.
So Rubio, and then what happened when Rubio dropped out?
When Rubio dropped out, there were only, I think, Kasich and Cruz and Trump were the only ones left, and so I jumped on the Cruz bandwagon.
You went to the convention as a Cruz delegate, and then what happened?
Well, before we got to the convention, Cruz had dropped out of the race, and Trump had clinched the nomination.
But you had to be convinced to support Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
So what was the convincing process like?
Well, the convention had a lot to do with it. After listening to his children talk about their father and listening about how successful they've been, and I think it has a lot to do with the upbringing that they had, because children that successful who admire their father the way they do don't have a bad father. And then also listening to some of the people that worked for him. There was a woman who works at his winery, and there was a gentleman, he was Muslim, who was also involved with Trump's organization. And they were both very, very supportive of Donald Trump and his ability to succeed in business.
So your mind was changed at the convention?
Yeah, that was pretty much the turning point. Yes.
And Manis, you also were not an early Trump supporter. And in fact, you didn't even vote for Donald Trump. What were your reservations?
Yeah, I left the presidential slot blank. I voted Republican down the rest of the ticket. As a Republican, I support the nominee. I've spent the last 3.5 years doing groundwork. Throughout the whole entire process, I kept my opinions to myself, given that it was my job to support Republicans. So, yeah, the president-elect is the president-elect, and I support him in his efforts and all that he does. The process from me not voting him in to where I support Trump has been one of just thought and considering the people that he has around him.
What did you not like about him initially? What were your reservations?
Several. I mean, given that my family is from Haiti and the uproar with all that.
Immigration policy?
Yes.
Okay.
And given his management style, at least what I understood his management style to be. That said, I've spoken to people who have interacted with him personally, and it's different. So I'm looking forward to the next 4 years to see what happens.
You're giving him the benefit of the doubt?
I am, but it's more than that. I'm going to place my trust in the process. I'm going to place my trust in the system. He is now the president. That's not going to change.
Braden, you were a Ted Cruz supporter. You were part of the Never Trump movement.
Yes.
Are you still part of the Never Trump movement?
I would say that I'm strongly Never Trump, and I've thought about this and how I would respond to this. This has been an ongoing question from personal friends, family, members of the media. And the best answer I can give you is that I don't vote for fascists. I've never liked racism. I've never liked misogyny, and I do not support authoritarianism. So for me, never means never ever, and I don't care if he's president. I don't care if he's the Republican nominee. I am guided by my convictions and my conscience, and my sole allegiance is to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and I think he is a one-man constitutional crisis, and that is just the way it is. And I think that there are enough Republicans who, if they examine their own history and their own personal battles with our nominee and our future president, I think that all of us have some serious reservations about his policies, his positions, his personal stances, and I don't think somebody's family, their sons, the people they surround themselves with change who they are as a person individually. And he's going to be president. I expect much more of the people that lead us. I think as conservatives, we expect the highest level of accountability from our elected officials, and I don't think he meets the standard.
Olga was telling me earlier that just watching his cabinet picks has made her feel better, has made you feel better about
yes.
Anything that Donald Trump has done in the last month or so that has made you feel better or worse?
I think I'm probably with you here in that I hope he does the best, right? I mean, he is the president of the United States, and he's going to govern the country for 4 years. And so I think for all of us, we have to hope that he performs well, that the people he selects for the Supreme Court, the people that he selects to hold, you know, ranking offices, you know, in the executive branch, that those people do exactly what he said that he was going to do. And so in one sense, I do hope for the best because he is going to be the leader of the country. But I also think that we have to keep people accountable. I think dissent is the truest form of patriotism. And so in the same way that I would hold a Democratic president accountable to the Constitution, I'm going to hold Donald Trump as equally accountable, if not more so, because of my serious concerns and serious reservations about his previous positions.
Moniz?
For me, it's about trusting the system that's currently in place. I have faith in the role of the presidency and the Congress. I believe in America. And so in my faith, I don't see it getting out of hand as, you know, the sky is falling. The sky, because we have Trump, that doesn't make sense to me.
I believe in the process, too. I believe in checks and balances. I believe in limited government. I believe that our representatives represent us. But I also think that we ought to believe people when they say that they support internment camps. We have a process in place and it protects us, but we also can't ignore what people say and what they do in their lives and in their careers, especially when they're running for office and they're very open about their disapproval of certain segments of the population or their extreme views on torture. Or seriously, we're seriously negotiating and talking about whether or not we will illegally round up 11 million people, prohibit certain segments of the population from entering the country. We're seriously talking about internment camps, and you're going to sit there and talk to me as though that's a truly limited constitutional position. I don't know any Republican president who could find any of those provisions anywhere in the Constitution or Bill of Rights. I just don't see it, guys.
Well, you know, I've heard about the internment camps, and you know, I think that's overblown. You know, there's so much fake media out there anymore. And you know, I've experienced that with my family. You know, they come to me and they say, you know, because my family is chock full of Democrats, and they talk to me about, you know, as a Hispanic woman, I should be against him because he wants to deport all of the illegal aliens. I lived in a border town for several years, and I experienced illegal aliens in a very personal level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you've lived it, you have a whole different perspective about illegal immigration, especially when you've got the criminals coming over, the drug lords. I remember living in El Paso, Texas, when they shut the border down because one of our DEA agents was exposed who had infiltrated one of the cartels. And they shut the border down because the cartel said, we're sending him back, but we're sending him in pieces. And you'll find him in the cars coming across the border. And as a Hispanic woman, you know, my family, some of my grandparents came from Mexico. You know, I just...
Do you think he's lying?
Donald Trump?
Yeah. When he says the things he says, you think he's lying?
Well, you know, he's a celebrity. I think sometimes politicians are always very, very careful about what they say.
Not Donald Trump.
But he's not a politician. He didn't come to us like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. He didn't come up the ranks. He just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when my family gets angry at me about Donald Trump being president, I said, you know, I'm not the one you need to be mad at. You know, the people that elected him weren't so much us. I mean, Manise himself said he didn't vote for him. I did. Wisconsin, Ohio, Minnesota, you know, the people that have lost their jobs and lost their families, those are the people that have said, we've had enough.
Manise, I want to bring you into this discussion because you did tell me that immigration policy was one of the real hard things that you had in terms of deciding about Donald Trump. Your family is Haitian. You're from Haiti. What do you think when Donald Trump says we need to deport all the illegal aliens and that we need to build a wall? I mean, what was your reaction?
There's serious issues there that need to be addressed when it comes to immigrants, immigration policy, when it comes to how it's all dealt. Here in Washington State, we're kind of insulated from a lot of that. We're not next to the border. There's no Mexico or like in, down in Florida where my family is. There's no drug running up I-95 or anything like that. And we kind of live in our own little bubble, but it's a serious issue. And we need to look at it differently. So my hope is that with everything that Donald Trump is saying, it draws attention to the issue. Should it be dealt exactly the way he's saying it should be dealt with, I don't know. I don't have all of the information. And I think it's ignorant for people to say that's not how it should be done. I also think it's ignorant for people to say that's exactly how it needs to be done. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. I think it's something that him and the people around him needs to seriously consider because it's an absolute issue.
And there are laws in place that aren't being followed. There are illegal immigrants here who are criminal who are still walking the streets.
We're talking about the future of the Republican Party and the election of Donald Trump with three Republicans, Olga Farnum, Manise Pierre, and Braden Wilkerson. And I want to get back to kind of what this all of this sort of dissension and division means for the party going forward. We have at this table a lot of different views about what should happen to the party. Braden, you were part of the Never Trump movement. Olga, you told me that you were really angry at the Never Trump people. and yes. kind of blame them for a lot of what happened. In
well, yeah, it was very disappointing when Bill Bryant came out and disavowed Donald Trump. He was a fabulous candidate. He would have made an incredible governor. And I think he shot himself in the foot. So, you know, I think we hurt ourselves. And, you know, Susan often says, you know, that the Republican Party.
Susan Hutchison.
She calls us a patchwork quilt of ideas. And we are. You know, Braden, he's a man of conviction and he believes in his ideas. I am disappointed because as a Republican, I think we need to support our candidates. I voted for Chris Vance because I would prefer him over Patty Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my husband doesn't agree with me 100% of the time. I'm lucky to get him to agree with me 50% of the time. But we can be a patchwork quilt of ideas in the end. And the Democrats are very good at this. The Democrats in the end will stick together. Bernie Sanders came out and he was all for Hillary.
It's funny because the Democrats that we had at the table yesterday said the exact opposite. We had one person saying Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. So in that respect, Braden, is there something to be said about that? Do you need to fall in line as a Republican at some point behind your presidential candidate?
I don't think so. And I think the strongest sort of under theme of who we are as conservatives, I think we are rugged individuals. I think that is probably the one thing that unites us all in the patchwork quilt is that we believe very strongly that the smallest minority is the individual. And I think I really believe that dissent is truly it's the truest form of patriotism. It's a long-standing tradition of our American values that sometimes you have to be guided by your conviction and your conscience. It's what we expect of our Republican representatives to sometimes be the no vote, the single no vote. And I think that that's sort of where I stand on this is that I'm just not sold. I'm not convinced. And, you know, I hope the best and I hope, you know, the best for all of us and for the country. We'll move on. We'll work together and fight together in legislative races and to try to take back the Senate and the House and do a lot of those things.
So the mantra for the Republican Party is often that you guys are a big tent, right? You have room for libertarians, social conservatives, Tea Partiers. You all fit under that tent. Is that really true going forward? Do you all feel like you have a home in this party? And I guess I'm looking at you, Braden, but do you all feel like you can bring all of these really disparate groups together, especially after such a really bruising election? Moniz.
Because I worked on the ground, game, because I had to organize, I had to deal with all of the different people. And so for me, it didn't matter what my opinion was. It didn't matter. And so if we are Republicans who want success in the state, we have to reach the point in which we're willing to work together, right? So if we were willing to work together, for instance, with the Bill Bryant thing, I understand that that is where Bill Bryant was at, but that ended up hurting us down ticket. And I don't like this phrase, but you got to fall in line at some point if you want to win. Otherwise, we end up in the same situation we have been. If you truly believe in the things that you say you believe in, then it's about success.
But for what purpose?
To better the state. Is that not what it is you're looking for? Are you not looking to spread your conservative ideals across the state?
Of course. But Donald Trump doesn't represent my conservative ideas.
I'm not talking about Donald Trump at this point. We're talking about just making the state where you live at home better.
I voted for every Republican on my ballot but Donald Trump.
That's good. Thank you.
Well, you know, we're going to have to leave it here. And I hope we'll continue this conversation. I'm sure we will continue this conversation about the future of the Republican Party. Thank you so much for being here. Olga Farnum, Moniz Pierre, and Braden Wilkerson. Thanks for joining us. And thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This is The Record. I'm Deborah Wong.